Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And my co-host Robert.
Hello.
And the Triumvirate is back together again after a one-week hiatus. Ray, how you doing?
Good. So, enjoying the new job.
Excellent. So it looks like I might have a couple more opportunities now with the new schedule to actually attend some events, which would be pretty awesome. Robert, you were at an event north of here.
Yep. A whopping 3-hour drive north with no snow, surprisingly, up in Flagstaff. Just a little RTT. But that was my first live experience with how the balance sheet actually affected my army.
So first, for those of you who are not familiar yet, Flagstaff is 3 hours north of Phoenix. And although it's only a 3-hour drive north, it's like, 6,000 feet straight up. So you're getting to high altitude. So there's a good chance you should be getting snow at this time of year.
When we got up there, it was chilly. My three shirts were a nice blanket until I got halfway through round one, and then I was sweating. But
so how'd the Flaghammer event go?
It went well. Of all things, I was the only orc player in the entire field. Our teammate Tim was the only admit player in the field, and there were three custodes players.
Interesting. Okay.
I give one guy props. He brought an Ares gunship.
Hope he had room to deploy it.
Luckily, most of the missions that were there were large enough for him to deploy the gosh darn thing. But, I mean, it didn't change the fact that he just deployed it all the way in the back corner anyway.
Right.
I ended up coming in third. I had to play Tim round two, and that matchup of Admech with Orcs is affectionately a coin flip. Well, that was proven wrong in that game. Because I got to go first. I punched Tim really, really hard. But on his second turn, he killed all my scrap jets and all my defcoptas in a single shooting phase, which proceeded to make me lose the game. So.
Wow. Okay. I can see the scrap jets, because that's the problem with flyers, is they have to hit hard because they're nowhere to hide. But
the scrap jets are the buggies.
Oh, the buggies. I'm thinking the
And no, he also ended up did end up killing my one docker jet on his first turn, but then my WAS bomb came in from reserves, and then he ended up so he literally killed all of the killing power in my army outside of my squig buggies with their bouncy balls of doom.
Wow.
Yeah. No, Tim played really well, and it was a close game until I just started failing on turn three. But then Tim lost his last round with some really cold dice rolls against Space Wolves, and it was not a good game for him at all.
Oh, that's always the hard part with RTTs. You get one or two bad games and you're done. So, well, glad to see it was a cool event. Get a little test run of the game, and what major changes did you have to make to your list since the balancing?
Obviously I had to drop my second docker jet, and I had to consolidate all of my buggies into single units. But
did it actually affect how many buggies you took total?
Yes, it did actually, because with losing the plane, instead of bringing the Deathkiller Wartrike as my warlord because real estate issues, I swapped to a warboss on bike and was able to then drop my Grots for Beast Nagaboys, and I took a Kill Rig. So I had some good stuff in there, but the Kill Rig didn't do very much this entire event because it either didn't live long enough for it to matter, it got stuck in combat with a Telamon for three turns. Or, like on my first round, I blew up my opponent in a turn and a half. So my kill rig literally got to do nothing.
Some crazy. You mentioned with Tim, with the you pinched him, he punched you back. Is having all the buggies in their units as opposed to being spread out, do you think that would have a bigger difference?
Yes, it makes them a lot harder to hide, because there was one point in time, like for my scrap jets, there was about a good inch or less than an inch of a line of sight that I could draw from my buggy to one of Tim's units. And Tim was able to also take that. And my squig buggies couldn't, he didn't bother shooting the squig buggies at all, but he saw my def cop just hanging out behind a building ready to fly across and pick up his last two Bellastari. But nah, the buggy units being units of three, definitely a hiding issue. I can't simply tuck one behind a building somewhere.
That's pretty interesting how that all kind of changed about. And the kill rig isn't exactly small either. That's on a regular knight base, isn't it?
No, it's on a longer base because it's like 170 millimeters or something like that. It's a stupid long base.
Huh. Okay.
It's the same width as, like, same initial width as the buggies and the knight bases, but as you just go up in size, you just get longer and longer. Huh.
I haven't seen one in the wild yet. I've only seen them in online and in theory. I haven't seen one in person. So I was like, oh, okay.
Well, if you get to play me sometime, I'll probably bring one. Yep.
I'll definitely have to get some. Yeah, because our winter league is starting up in about 2 weeks. So maybe the three of us can finally play each other and go from there. So it'll be a lot of fun. So in additional news, GW dropped a couple news on the next few codices coming out. So we have news regarding Custodes, Tau, and Gene Stealer Cult. So interesting little tidbits that they're throwing out, starting off with how they improve the troop choices from each faction.
Yep. Some of these things are definitely a head scratcher because we don't know everything yet. But some of them are like, okay, that might be pretty good.
Yeah, the one head scratcher I have is this was where I need to rely on Ray with his experience with Gene Stealer Cult, trying to figure this one out. So, Ray, can you elaborate on what this really means?
Well, we know the acolyte hybrids have been buffed to toughness 4. I mean, it's certainly helpful, because you got to remember one of the things with Gene Stealers is, you know, they're a kind of a horde army that's supposed to be sort of a kind of a merging of the Gene Stealers, which, if memory serves, are toughness 4 anyway, and humans, which are toughness 3. So, I mean, why would you have the something that's more Gene Stealer than human being toughness 3? So that kind of gave them a boost just to kind of give them a boost in when it comes to them getting shot at by the ever popular toughness 4 weapons. And then, of course, you know, something like toughness 6 can take them out pretty easy when they're hit wounding on 2s. So,
right.
Now that they're toughness 4, that's not going to happen so much.
Yeah, for your, you know, one of your mainline troop choices to get a plus 1 toughness is, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, it just, looking at it, this is looking at the other stats, I was looking at, are those the same? Are they still, like I said, we're still looking through this mail slot. We don't know what else is going on, so.
Yeah, so I mean, looking at the stuff for the hybrid, the movement stayed the same at 6, weapon skill remained 3, +6 skills the same, the strength was already 4, but the toughness was 3. Everything else remains the same. Okay. Another thing they were given is the cult icon ability. This, during the command phase, if this unit commands a model equipped with a cult icon, it can summon the cult. Just reading that can sound really, you can get really confused. Basically, what it means is they're like the ability that the apothecaries have. So you can bring back D3 destroyed models in the unit.
So it's interesting you read it as the apothecary. I keep hearing this calls upon reinforcements lurking in the shadows. So I was wondering, would that have to be a point cost? You know, kind of like when you summon demons. Zach, and this be is trying to figure. Well, curious when the codex comes out. How that works?
So there already is a cult icon ability in the old version. It cost 10 points, but it was different. The old cult icon is reroll hit rolls of 1 for units attack in the fight phase. So is there going to be a cost associated with it? Certainly. What is that cost going to be? We don't know yet.
Interesting.
Yeah, the way I kind of look at it is because it says return D3 to the destroyed unit, and the fact that it's not actually attached to the cult icon rule that they have pictured in the article, it could very well be that the cult icon is going to be different per unit, maybe. And then D3 destroyed models, I don't think you'll have to pay reserve points to return those models, because those are models that have already been paid for in the initial unit cost.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because you generally don't have to pay for replacing models. You have to, like, if you started a new unit, you'd have to pay for those. But just an interesting phrasing. I was just kind of like, how's that going to work? And I don't know. I have to kind of think this through and see what other information we get on them. Other news, the Fire Warriors, as well as the Pathfinders, have a couple nifty new rules. The Pulse Carbine, for some reason, finally got a extension in range. And so that was kind of nice. It used to be an 18 inches, now zooming all the way up to 24 inches. So that was kind of nice. One thing I did notice, I'll give you an idea how long ago I played Tau, I used to have the pinning rule. I don't see anything like that or any similar type rule. Here before, so I'm like, okay, I guess it doesn't have that anymore. But the pulse rifle is another interesting one. I can see there's pretty much universally on the internet, everyone went meh. The pulse rifle has its range extended to 36 inches. That means it can rapid fire at 18 inches, and it's still strength 5, but it's now AP minus 1, 1 damage as opposed to AP 0. So everyone's kind of like, big deal. It was already a shorter board. Does distance really, range really make a difference? And part of it kind of thought, well, if you're trying to stay out of close combat, if you got line of sight, you can pretty much hit anything on the board at this point.
Yeah, that is definitely something that matters. And range, surprisingly enough, does actually really matter when you're having to draw diagonal lines through terrain to the model that you can see. You're kind of like, And all that fun jazz, because if you're like, oh, the front of the unit is at 32 inches, but the only one I can see is at 36 and a half, and you're just saying,
right.
Fun measurement shenanigans.
Yeah, let's look at that. So, if I remember being rapid fire, it's not that big of a deal with movement, but I don't remember Fire Warriors being particularly fleet of foot when it came to moving. I think they're on like a 5-inch move or something like that.
Yeah, so, like 5 or 6 or something like that.
Yeah. But I also remember the key thing that if you played a lot of fire teams was it was the overlapping fire. You know, that one unit's not going to kill you. It's just the other two units that are also within range are going to wither you down. And after a while, you just cannot make enough saves. So.
Yep. Weight of dice. That's how Tau do things.
Yep. So the last, of course, was bestowed in quite a few previews, not only in this article, but today's article as well.
Yep. So they should have given the first change to us way back in 8th edition when I first started even looking at them. All of our guns and melee weapons are now flat 2 damage instead of D3 damage in melee, which was the biggest nuisance. Because, like, Guardian Spears were 2 damage in shooting, but D3 damage in melee. Now, it's 2 damage across the board. But the Guardian Spear still gets you up to, like, Strength 7. It's still AP3. The Sentinel Blade only gets you up to Strength 6, which is better than being strength 5 with it, unless I'm getting my stats mixed up. Again, high AP because custodes are swinging with power swords the entire game. And then the shooting for the actual Sentinel Blade went from strength 4 AP 0 2 damage to having one actual bit of AP on there. So it gives the custodes the abilities to actually, like, you know, shoot through armor with a Sentinel Blade if they get stuck in long enough.
And they were always pistol too? I didn't remember that part.
Yeah, the Sentinel Blades were always pistols.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I can shoot with my weapon in close combat.
Yeah, I point at you and I laugh at you while I shoot your buddy next to you. Just ha, ha, ha,
yep. An interesting leadership 11. That was like verboten. You know, you could never go above 10.
Yeah, the leadership 11 bit that was talked about when they revealed the Blade Champion from the box set is really weird. It's a... Because the biggest thing that would kill us is mortal wounds and stuff like Phantasm Grenade Launchers. You have to roll higher than your leadership characteristic. Okay. Now, custodes literally in their minimum size squads of like 3 or 4 can never fail morale checks. Ever. You have to take a 6-man squad in order to fail morale on a 6 if they kill 5 of them kind of thing. It's like, why?
I was going to say, even at a leadership 10, what kind of ability do they even have to take out a unit in morale?
It's mainly in reference to how Drukhari have stuff like the trophy racks and other aura abilities that are like, oh, -1 leadership and all this other stuff. So basically, it's extremely rare for custodes to ever fail any kind of leadership anything because you take them in such small squads anyway. But the possibility is still there, and now being leadership 11 across the board will make that possibility even smaller, and you have to really commit into that kind of idea to knock a custode's leadership down to nothing.
It's funny that they just didn't make him fearless, but I like it better that a higher score, there's always a chance. Like I said, there's all these leadership shenanigans and that Jakari have. There are a few other armies have those as well, not quite as much.
Night Lords.
Oh, I forgot about them. Yeah, they had it as well. I was thinking the craft world, I don't know if they'll keep it with the Hemlock Fighter and some of the Harlequin stuff has that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be crazy. Harlequins versus Custodes. It's like elite on elite.
I've done that matchup way too many times this edition. Fusion pistols, they terrify me.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So, no, what terrifies me is this: the article that came out today. I was trying to read it. Granted, I did not give it the time to concentrate. Reading this new custodes, like, for lack of a better term, I guess this is their new chapter tactic. What is this nonsense?
So, the Marshal Katas are equivalent. Their easiest comparison is the Necron Command Protocols. where the Necron command protocols were after you pick territories and you deploy, but before you see who goes first, you get to pick your five out of the six protocols for the entire game, and they each had two settings, and you have to pick one to be active during that battle round. And depending if you were a actual named dynasty or not, there are some protocols that get double benefits. So basically, the Marshal Katas follow that same idea, because it's after you deployed, but before she goes first, you have to pick three of them. So it sounds like they're going to have at least like five or six. And each kata has two stances, as they called, so two different benefits. So basically, you pick which kata you do and which stance you're doing out of that one. So like if you have choice one, choice two, and choice three, you have the bullet points of 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B. And that's the order that you have to do them in. You have to finish your first kata before you move to the next one. So like in the article, the first one they reference is Callistus, where if you take the first stance, each time you advance, you roll a second d6, but you discard one of the results. So you get to choose how far you get to move. The other stance is if you make a normal move or advance in the shooting phase, you count as remaining stationary. So it doesn't allow you to advance and charge at all, but it lets you go, oh, I'm going to advance this unit of something like Sagittarium with their Adrastus calibers. You advance them 6 plus a d6, and now they're hitting on twos because they no longer suffer the assault penalty because they count as remaining stationary.
Yikes, that's not cool.
And then, yeah, some of the stipulations after you finish the first kata, as I mentioned, you can't go to a different one halfway through. So sadly, like, you have to do one thing, do the other half of it, and then you're allowed to pick a different one. And you can't pick the same kata more than once, so you can't double up on the stances anymore, well, at all. So you can't do double Callistus during the game, and you can't do something like the second one they showed off, the Dakatarai. These names are going to be hard to say. Where if you're in stance one and you're in engagement range, your opponent only gets to pile in or consolidate a single inch.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually really bonkers, because you just sit there and go, oh, I have my custodian guard with storm shields, which are most likely still going to only have a 4-up invuln at this point. And guess what? You only get to go an inch, so you only get like maybe six guys in there. But the second stance is each time you attack with your unit, you give yourself an extra attack on your characteristic, but all your weapons go down one damage. So
that spear we were just talking about before, you get an extra attack, but now it goes down the damage one. Okay.
Yeah, which in the current meta, with all of the damage reduction that kind of exists, no longer matters, because now you get an entire extra attack that can potentially do more stuff.
Right.
And then the last one they showed off was Captaris. So the first stance, short and sweet, of each time a melee attack is made against you, your opponent cannot re-roll the to hits, which is huge, because you get something like, I don't know, Bloodbride witches, and they just sit there and go, ah, and they whiff their entire roll. They don't get to re-roll any of that.
Yeah, just a lot. That's what we just talked about with the Leviathan stuff. Finally, Tyranids finally getting re-rolls to hit and all that.
Yeah.
Plus one. So now, yeah, that plus one timed with the re-rolls. Nope, sorry, no re-roll for you. Yeah, it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last half of it is every time an enemy unit that isn't a vehicle or a monster that is in engagement range of any of your infantry tries to fall back, you roll off with your opponent, and if you win that roll off, your opponent's unit can't fall back. Now, your opponent does get a plus one to their roll if their unit has the fly keyword.
That's different. So,
yeah, so we now have the equivalent of a shard net or whatever, like the witches do with the, you don't get to fall back, come here.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. Interesting. You know, the Fiends of Slaanesh still have the best one, so it's just automatic. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so these things that they are going to get are going to be very, very odd, because you need to think ahead of what you're doing, because it's until your next command phase. So you literally have to play your Katah basically turn by turn and see and try to do with it as much as you can.
But it's interesting, it's not like the Necron ones where you have to pretty much put your deck down at the start of the game and hope you remember, what was it doing on turn four again? Oh yeah. I didn't quite come out to plan. So
well, it actually does have that stipulation as well.
Oh, it does.
Because yeah, so you have to select your primary, and then your secondary, and then your tertiary. So you do have to put them in order. So that's where it's like you have to have a game plan of what you want your custodes to do, and hopefully it works out.
Right.
I have a question.
Go back to the one where go ahead, Dre.
They mentioned tertiary, but I mean, unless I'm missing it, I'm not seeing any kind of tertiary thing.
Well, no, it's the reason why it's in the first part, you must select a primary, secondary, and tertiary martial kata from the list opposite for your army to use in the battle. So right. It's in the first paragraph of the actual ability wording. So basically, you get to go 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, and then your third one is either A or B, because obviously there's only five turns in a game.
Right. So again, I see where primary and secondary come into play. Primary is...
Like, are you talking about like game effectiveness?
Well, so it's mentioning primary, secondary, and tertiary for the martial katas. Okay. So obviously the Calestus is an example. That's a primary. So picking a stance seems to be obviously a secondary. So what's the tertiary?
Well, no, it's what it means by primary, tertiary, and primary, secondary, and tertiary is your primary is Calestus. Your secondary is Dakata Rai. Your tertiary is Captaris. So you pick three different katas, and then you pick a stance from that kata. So like if you make Calestus your primary kata, you go, okay, I'm going to do stance one during round one. I'm going to do stance two during round two, and so on and so forth. So it's the same idea behind the Necron command protocols, where you go, oh, I'm going to do protocol of the storming wind or whatever the 6-inch movement one is called or whatever. And you pick either the top or the bottom half of the card. It's that kind of mentality.
Okay. So it's talking your first, second, and third choices, not on a matter of multiple
objectives.
Yeah, no, these are just like the Black Templar vows, you pick them, you get a benefit. The Necron command protocols, you pick which half of the card you want. These ones, they don't affect your secondaries at all, because these are like chapter tactics kind of deal, where you get them for your entire army, and they affect how you play your army, because they allow you to do extra things. So yeah, so like for instance, if you wanted to plan to go second, and you pick something like Calestus, using the article as the example to be your primary kata, you would pick the first stance to go, okay, my opponent moved forward. I'm going to head them off at the pass if you're a more mobile army. Or if you're more shooting based, you pick the second stance to do your advances and your normal moves and shoot with no penalties. So it's that kind of mentality.
Oh, okay. It's their choice.
Yeah, because
them choosing the terms primary, secondary, and tertiary are what confused me.
And that's fair. It took me several readings of this morning to go, okay, I understand how this works.
It's crazy. I'm assuming there's probably going to be a character in the codex that allows you to go like double up on one of them or something like that.
Probably Trajan.
Yeah,
probably. And there's also probably going to be a stratagem that lets you like maybe benefit from both katas or something.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, because I actually gave the second paragraph a more in-depth reading, and you literally pick the kata during your command phase. So you can actually respond to something.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking back to that first one you talked about where you restrict your opponent to a 1-inch consolidate, considering that most of your units are, you know, 3-man, 5-man units, you're actually still in danger of being trapped. So back in the old 8th edition assault technique. So that's actually pretty powerful now that I think about that.
Yep.
Especially if you cleave out the first, if for whatever reason your opponent's taking away miles from the front rank. Nope, sorry. Only 1-inch move. Can't get too close.
Yeah, it's only for pile-in or consolidation moves, though. So at that point, it's a, I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me, kind of.
Right.
So that'll be fun to like, oh, yeah, here's my 5 Terminators just chopping away with Castellan Axes.
Well, I'm thinking like Harmagaunts have the 6-inch pile-in. And I also know the Succubus upgrade, the Showstealer, has a 6-inch. Not only is it a 6-inch pile-in, but they can pile it in any direction. And they're like, nope, you only get 1-inch. You can go in any direction you want, but you're not going to go too far. So,
well, it's the only reason why I said the 1-inch is because normal pile-in consolidates, obviously, they're 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
The Dakotarai one specifically says subtract 2 inches. So your Succubus, so the Succubus still can pile in and consolidate 4 inches, and the Hormagaunts can still do 4 inches.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so how they're going to phrase that. I get to see what kind of rules FAQs coming out after that.
Well, that was me with improper phrasing, but we all get the idea. If you don't have movement shenanigans like that, you're literally only moving 1 inch and you're just going to not like it.
All right. So the magic question is, will these codices be released in time for we only have 2 events left really in the end of the year. There is the, GW Invitational, which I totally forgot. I think last week I said the Austin event was the last of the GW events in the United States. I was wrong. Sorry about that. I had totally forgotten. They have some sort of Invitational event in Los Angeles at their GW headquarters there. Totally forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And beyond that is the Las Vegas Open, the famous end of the ITC season. And conveniently enough, their player packet came out today, and they've officially announced that rules need to be released before January 13th to be official at LVO. So here we go. Odds are that these codices will be here by January 13th. What do you guys think?
0. you're optimistic.
Yeah, and I'd also like to take a second to point out that the Invitational is actually being held in Grapevine, Texas.
Oh, is it? My mistake. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just full of misinformation today.
I mean, it's probably like their U.S. branch of headquarters. It's probably where it is.
Well, actually, their warehouse is in Nashville. That's what I was surprised they put the store in.
Grapevine is a little bit more central to the United States. It's also probably cheaper to put it in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd go so far as to venture that as far as weather goes, it's probably a little bit more pleasant. At least compared to Memphis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I understand, the Pasadena location is much smaller, too, compared mm-hmm. to the Grapevine one. So
yeah, and that had a lot to do with, because it was originally supposed to be done at Pasadena, but I think when they realized how small the space was going to be, that's when they... Because they announced that they were changing it a while back, but it got forgotten pretty quick.
Apparently I remembered it that way, so...
Yeah, the other thing that probably will perk up most of our ears is the fact that the Invitational is going to be using missions from Chapter Approved 2022.
At least
according to rumors. So that'll be interesting. Yeah. So I'd be curious to see if that rumor is true and how do we get our hands on, you know, what, I mean, obviously they're going to stream the event, so they're going to have to explain the mission on air. So that'd be fun to watch.
So yeah, I have to have their audio also, taken care of first to do that.
Yeah, and not have terrain that 18 Hive Guard can deploy right into on the line.
I kept looking at that, going like, I had to literally go back to like previous feeds. I was like, was that the same terrain they had in New Orleans? Could have swore they had like something in dead center, like smaller pieces that blocked line of sight.
Apparently not.
That was bizarre. I thought it was interesting too. I was like, it was really cool to see, oh wow, they're using the new orc terrain. And I started looking at it. It's like, how many boxes did it take to make that one piece of terrain? I think it's like four of the orc ruins. So basically, one entire kill team box makes a ruin for 40k.
So yeah, they must have had a whole bunch of extra sprues laying around.
I guess. I mean, power to them. They did look great, by the way. Almost, yeah. In a factory, mm-hmm. some loss.
Yeah. The thing that it makes me think of with the rumor of the 2022 missions being used at the Invitational is how close to release are we to the next Chapter Approved?
Well, it normally comes out in the spring. I think that's when the last one came out. So that means we'd probably be going to the printers now.
I'm actually
going
to present the theory that we are going to see it come out before the end of February.
Oh. Yeah, because they already have in the balance data slate, they already had the points figured out for Drukhari and Admech. So that means they've already been working on it.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows if they already have it on the printers or not.
Yeah, I think somewhere we learned that the lead time for the printers is 90 days, which is the whole argument for digital versus print copies and all that stuff being a little quicker. But, I mean, maybe it's already Dawn to Press. Maybe Ray's on to something. They especially because you figure in the Christmas holiday. So.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they probably wisened up to the supply chain issues because I believe they're printed somewhere off. I know it's not printed at Nottingham. I remember mm-hmm. that, but I forgot where. It's like another printing company. They take care of it.
Yeah. And it obviously also coincides with the delayed release of the Custodes and Gene Sealer Cult stuff because that was pushed back to early 2022.
Yeah. So,
which means Tau got
and unlike the, too. As you got, yeah, that's true. I mean, they probably all three of them will be, you know, Q1, but it's just, you know, we were expecting the first two to be like December and then Tau to be in January. And that doesn't seem to be the case. So,
yeah.
And I'm basically at this point just swimming in the tears of all those Chaos players who have come to realize that probably means they're. Codexes are getting pushed back as well.
Yeah. 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 Probably July at this point. So.
Yeah. So, do we want to move on to our little chit chat about how to prepare for LVO?
Yeah, I'm gonna throw a curveball to you guys first. All right. So chapter approved coming, 2022 coming out in 90 days. What's the one thing you want to see changed?
Orc brain not good at curveballs.
Neither were orcs good at when I did a Bloodville version of baseball. It's their big. They couldn't hit a curveball.
Oh man. Honestly, the main thing I'd want to see from chapter approved is another shuffle of the secondaries, personally, because some of the secondaries, like Octarius, are just easy choices if you know your army's good at actions. And some of the other secondaries for the missions don't get taken at all, like Rays on the Scorched Earth mission. No one ever takes that one.
Yeah, which they stole from us, by the way.
You're never going to let that go, are you, Ray?
No, I'm not.
I mean, Eric got that. But Orc brain not good with names. But no, the shuffles of the secondaries is the main thing that I want, because taking the same things over and over and over again with anyone can get rather tedious, because you end up with a lot of the same scores, and there's no real diversity outside of the book secondaries that armies can take specifically from the codexes.
Right. Yeah. I've heard talk of, remember when Chapter Proof came out during 8th edition, every faction got one stratagem, just to kind of tide you over until your book came over. Would be nice if every faction got a secondary, but I've heard that a lot online. I kind of lean to what you're saying. Fix the generic secondaries, because we all take the same thing. It's like the same six or seven are taken in every game. I don't think anyone's ever taken it's one of the psychic ones. I think it's Pierce the Veil or something like that. Or
yeah.
You hear Abhor the Witch, you sometimes see the ritual one. That's when we have to cast something at center field a little bit. But there's some you never take, and you're just like, why? Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. So.
Well, it's actually a fair point. And sticking on secondaries, I guess the one other thing that I know I'd want to see is how secondaries can interact with each other. So I'm going to use Dark Angels as an example. You have Stubborn Defiance and the mission with Priority Target. Basically, as long as the Dark Angel player isn't getting tabled, they can get a free 30 points out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a problem. And it's just ridiculous that, and then they have, and on top of it, they're an army built on resilience. So it's just like, oh, okay. Be one thing if they're T3, 5 up armor, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. Nope. They are. And what about you, Ray?
I would honestly, not to sound like a broken record, but completely agree with what you guys have been saying when it comes to the secondaries. That being said, I'm also hoping that in that second little booklet that we see a bit of a price adjustment for the Necrons, because I kind of feel like some of the models there at this point might be a little overcosted.
Yeah, a points decrease on Warriors would be okay, dropping them down to like a solid 10 points a model, or maybe 9.
Yeah, I mean, like 10. I'd be happy with 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Unitorum Field Manual, I want my buggies to stay cheap, but for the sake of the game balance, the squig buggies and scrap jets have to be like 110 points or something, like they were back in 8th edition.
I'm not sure what they're going to do with points at this point, so I'm curious.
Well, you know what yours are.
Yeah, mine are here, and I'm pretty happy with them. I'll make it work. So it is a little more challenge building a list these days, but I think it's fair. But specific to the missions, I would add a couple things just to kind of bounce off. Make primary again. To your point, you know, some players can build their army so they know they're going to max out secondaries. So all they have to do is play the game to win primary. So rather than getting 5 points for one objective, 10 points for two, and 15 for holding more. And of course, that changes certain missions go to two and three. Make it more of a accelerated scope scale, is what I'm trying to say. So for example, you get 2 points for holding one, but then you get 5 points, or like, yeah, 5 points for holding two, and then you get the remaining points. So that, make sure that get to like be seven. Did that work right? 7, 14. Yeah, so you get 14 that way. So there's a bigger incentive to hold more objectives than your opponent, rather than just, I hold two, that's good enough. You know, I can make up the 5 points later in the game.
Yeah, because, I mean, 45 points is a nice round number, because what you could easily do it is, instead of having it be 5 points per, you could literally make it, I would say, like, well, actually, yeah, no, not a thing about it, because you can't score primary on the first turn. I was going to say, yeah, no, just make it three and you can score on the first turn.
Mm-hmm.
No, that won't work anymore, because those are points that you can't take away from your opponent.
Right.
So, yeah, no, like, making a sliding scale of like 2, 3, 4 or something like that. So it equals out to be like 9 points or something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, 2, 5, 8 is what I was thinking. Cause that way if I hold two, I've got 7 points. Is two enough to be outscore my opponent? If my opponent has more, he's going to score 8. He will outscore me this turn.
Mm-hmm.
Cause both of us hold two. And whereas before it's just like, well, each of us got 10 points. He got 5 more. I can, you know, as long as I take one away, I'm okay. Now you're like, I have to take, you know, there's more incentive to take objectives away from my opponent.
Yeah. That's good. Because, like, in missions that have 6 objectives and it's hold one, hold two, hold three, well, hold one, two more, it's like, okay, I get to sit on my two and I touch that third one. So now I just need to play keep away on this fourth one over here, and I'll have primary the entire game. So it's not exactly interactive.
All right.
Hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast, here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right. This is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match. Whenever you're heading out for that next tournament, you can just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy, the boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Extreme Honest Podcast.
Second thing I'd change real quick. So looking at other games that use this sort of action objective thing, one game in particular, don't want to name names because it was a 40K podcast, but it rhymes with Infinity. They actually, if it's a action that is resolved in your turn, it's not automatic. They have like different stats you have to roll under to get there. So for example, like Rod would, you know, you could fail Rod on a 2+. Or you can make it to where they fail it on a, you get Rod on a 3+, but if you're objective secured, you get it on a 2+. I get it, the action economy, and when they first came out with 9th edition, it had a real cool idea. You don't want your, I forgot the fancy upgraded Terminators for Khorne are, you know, you don't want them raising banners. You know, that's a waste of their time, but when you have enough throwaway units like lictors and mandrakes and whatnot, and urgles for crying out loud, that can score you so many points so fast, and there's nothing your opponent can do about it because it's done at the end of the turn or end of the movement phase, there should be some sort of element of risk. And that's actually one thing back into that other game I mentioned, the most popular faction. They have the best military, so they have the best shooting, and they they're actually they have the lowest stats for doing objectives. And there are literally times they're like blowing their opponent off. Did you put that flag up yet? No, hold on. One more try. How about now? Oh, next turn. Oh, game's over. I never got the flag up. You're just like, ah! Which is both a feel bad, but it also adds a little element of it's not automatic type thing.
Yeah. And the other thing that they could do is instead of tying it to just infantry, because right now some actions can be done by characters and other things like that, they could attach action abilities specifically to troop units. So that way only troops could do them. But that's also alienating a lot of the other really good infantry from like elites and fast attacks and all that other stuff from doing anything. But
or maybe that's something that you go back and add, like, you know, or commandos, correct me if wrong, they're elites.
Yep, they are elites, and storm boys are fast attacks.
Right. So commandos would be somebody I could see them doing certain actions, you know, such as like rod and stuff like that. That would make a lot of sense. Whereas I couldn't see storm boys. Wait, slow down. We need to retrieve this data. Everybody come in for a landing for a second. That doesn't make sense. But that'd be really detailed. That might be really hard to pull off. But
yeah. And then you would run into army composition issues with like Imperial Guard, where I don't know how many elite characters they actually take or elite non-characters that they take. And obviously sisters are stuck in their ways,
right?
And Hormagaunt's the army. No, Tyranids. Tyranids. Their troops have to encircle characters for maximum benefit. So now you're exposing your characters and your monsters to being shot at while your Termagaunts or Hormagaunts sit there and dig up for something,
right? And the third one is very controversial. I'm just going to spitball it. I've not play tested this, but strategic reserves, you know how they can come out from the sides? Have them able to come out from an objective if you hold it.
I could see that on like, a more expensive CP cost. So like you pay double the CP to have it spawn from an objective.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, most people hide away stuff like servitors. A servitor spawning on an objective? Okay, that's going to cost you like one or two. But they would also have to make it so that way you spawn on an objective that your opponent isn't currently touching, following all of the other like action stuff where you can't do it while your opponent's touching the objective kind of thing.
All right, so we're running a little long on time, so I don't know if we're going to get to our talk about LVO with the player packet out and how to prepare for it. So we have a little bit of time, but probably the biggest thing I would tell you is pick your army now, because as we gave our dire predictions, it doesn't look like anything new is going to come out in time to affect the meta at LVO. So the LVO today, meta today will be the LVO meta tomorrow. So plan your army accordingly, because you need time to paint and you need time to practice.
Yep, and definitely reach out to the TOs, which they have their emails on the player packets. Send necessary emails to necessary people to, you know, make sure that your super sweet attack from Mars Tau army can be played, because everyone will know what's a Riptide and what's not.
And that's no joke. They are very strict about enforcing unapproved conversions and also unpainted models. You need to be at battle ready standard, and they will pull those models off the table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Squad markings are another thing from a hobby standpoint, making sure that you can differentiate not only between squads, but also if you're playing, say, three patrols, and they all have three different chapter tactics of some kind, three different chapters, that you can easily differentiate between them. So I think last time I went, I had to paint the rims of my bases different colors so they could tell my different covens apart. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last but not least, I'd say right now to get started until we get into greater depth would be think about some sort of display board. It doesn't need to be fancy at this point. You got plenty of time to work. We'll talk about the fancy at another time. But you do not have the luxury of carrying around your battle foam bag or KR multi-case bag or anything else like that with you. You need something that's portable. And by the way, you need to be able to carry this thing on an elevator, which was very daunting the first time I went to LVO. So it's like, I gotta get my army from what, from where to where?
Yeah. And I can imagine I'm gonna have that issue because my travel case for my orcs is gonna be a 1520 from Battle Foam. So that's not exactly gonna be fun to roll around an event.
Now, you don't have the space or the time to take everything in and out. You have to have it on a, to make that work. You have to have it ready to go on a board. And to give you an idea, although LVL was really well set up, it could have been a lot worse. So our hotel block, both the, actually all three times I went, was 17th floor or higher. So you're talking about at least a 6 minute elevator ride. And then it's about a 200-yard walk from the elevator to the convention hall. Now, the good news was you didn't have to go through, like, the casino or anything like that. It was just a long hallway, but you, and you passed all the rooms where they had, like, the hobby clinics and another room where they had some of the other games going on before you got to the 40K hall, 40K hall where they had 40K being played. Then you get to the hall. You may have heard this event's a little on the large side. So when it hits you, when you come into that wall, it's not like anything you've ever seen before. A room that can hold 500 plus tables. It's legit. It's just rows of tables. And it can take you in easily a couple of minutes to get your army from point A to point B, especially if you are going up and down the rankings quite a bit. Because they do randomize some of the pairings. So it's just like, oh my God. So yeah, having all your stuff being portable is probably that. So that's probably the first few tips, that those are the things that are going to take the most amount of time, is get the hobby stuff out of the way early. And then, but also from a competitive standpoint, get your list ready, because you're not going to have a lot of time to really muck around at this point.
Yep. And I know the icing on the cake for me is, bring water bottles. Drink lots of water. Yeah. Do not get dehydrated while you're at this thing.
That is something, too, because they do have a food vendor service on site, but it is, everything is a hike to get to. So as we mentioned, let's say, even though the food service area was right outside of the 40K hall, that was still, you know, 100 yards that you had to get to. So this wasn't something that you could just, you know, why, hey, you finish your movement phase, I'm going to get something to drink. No, you pretty much lost your turn at that point. There are water stations there, at least at the previous venue. And so, and because you weren't allowed to bring in outside water, but if you could keep refilling the water that you had, it worked out really well. So those were some key things to keep. But yes, hydration was a key problem there as well. Trying to think of, we can talk about each, how about each week as we lead up to LVO, we'll display a couple more tips. How's that? So we spread it out across a couple episodes.
That works for me.
All right. We'll keep it there on hydration, especially from out of town. Us folks from Arizona, we're used to the dry heat, but boy, if you're from more humid temperatures, you're going to be in for a shock. Even in the air conditioning has nothing to do with humidity. Well, trust me, you will dry out. All right, so a lengthy episode, but a lot of good topics covered this week, so appreciate that. Guys, any parting thoughts before we close out this weekend?
Yeah, nothing from the York.
All right. So we'll keep tabs on any new releases, any new hints on Custodes, as well as Gene Stealer Cult as they come down the pike, and I guess we'll keep track of Tau stuff too. As in next week, we'll also talk a little bit more how to prepare for LVO and more your tournament action. So in the meantime, my name's Eric.
And I'm Robert.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.